Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Nervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. Yang Hervis. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big Final Four show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. And we are breaking down a Final Four that I don't think a lot of people have predicted. Tonight, joining us to run it all down and give us our takeaways from the road that got us here are John in Connecticut, are Andy in Seattle, and are Tom in New Jersey. You remember Tommy? It's been a while. I haven't heard from him, maybe a year or maybe longer. So this will be an entertaining program tonight. So they will. They will all be in the mix as we get into the latest coming to us from San Antonio. That's going to be big. So I'll share some thoughts of my own before we get everybody assembled. The big surprise, as everybody knows, is Loyola Chicago. And I think, you know, with each round, it's just seemed more and more... people are getting more and more confident in that team. And it really cultivated in a matchup which... They looked like they had a chance, like from the very beginning. They had a chance to really beat Kansas State at its own game with a defense, and they did it. Knocked down some big shots late, but really, for the most part, they were in control of that game. I thought they did a tremendous job, and they've had a great tournament, and they really are getting it done. So big kudos to Loyola Chicago for making the Final Four. I mean, nobody would be more deserving in that bracket, and they beat some good teams along the way. It started with Miami. Maybe they weren't that good. Tennessee, decent, but we know that they're vulnerable. And we also saw them in a pretty good game against Nevada. And then we also saw them beat Nevada, a very good team in its own right. And then Kansas State, which is not a very good team in its own right, but their defense usually can lock teams down. I think Kansas State could have been better if they had that big guy. I keep forgetting his name, but that really big guy might have improved their chances bigly, as we would say. So that's the latest on them. They made it. Tommy's boys, Villanova, in the show. We remember, everybody remembers how exciting their game against North Carolina was for the national championship a couple years ago. You know, nailed it on a buzzer beater. I mean, you can't ask for more than that. Well, they're back. And this time they're led by guys like Jalen Brunson and Mikhail Bridges. So it should be... You know, they've had their definite ups and their definite downs, but interestingly, for all we've spoken about, they gag it in a big spot and whatever, they're shaky. Oh, they lost to St. John's, but it's so funny, like with all the chaos going on, Villanova just going out there, just sweeping away teams, beating them convincingly. So I wonder if it'll be more of the same against Kansas. I doubt that. Kansas is pretty good, but Kansas had the opposite path where they could barely beat anybody in every game. They had a really good game against Duke on Sunday to clinch the regional and make the Final Four. And it's too bad for Duke because Grayson Allen had a definite shot at it and put up a floater at the end of regulation. And the would-be buzzer beater rolled off the rim and it gave Kansas another shot. And they went on to win. Kansas honestly was winning most of the game. I think the better team won in that one. And Michigan, you know, Andy and John were big on Michigan, and they got it done. I mean, they can have some ugly games. They can be pretty cold sometimes, but Beilein is a good coach, and he did a pretty good job. I mean, once they survived the game against Houston back in the second round with the near buzzer beater by Peel, I mean, from that point on, I think they felt like they liked their chances. So they did a pretty good job, beat Texas A&M, and then in the Elite Eight, took down Florida State, and away we go. So the Final Four is at our footstep, and we take our Spurs down to San Antonio. We're back at it. Time for our Final Four preview. We've been covering college basketball this entire month, so John and Andy are back with us. Let's introduce them one at a time. We'll also introduce Tommy. So we start with John in Connecticut. John, hope you're doing well out there. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Dave. Thanks for having me back. Look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts, especially Tommy, and how pumped he is to have Nova back in the Final Four.
Yeah, totally. Andy's also with us. Andy, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Good, Dave. Hey, did you really have... So when John and I got off the phone last week, did you really do a show for another 3 hours and 45 minutes with Fiddle and Cassin?
That is a true story.
Jesus, Dave.
That's insane, right? But it was a lot of fun. I had a good time. It was a good show. I broke it up into two podcasts, so that's pretty well, good stuff. I hope you listened to it, Andy. All right.
Oh, I will in parts. I just couldn't believe when Captain and Phil were like, yeah, we were on till like 1:45 Eastern time. I was like, I was in bed at like 10:30 West Coast time.
Yeah,
were they whining about the afternoon the whole time?
Not the whole time, but most of the time, Tom. So Tom joins us. It's been a long time. Tom, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good. I can't remember the last time I was on your podcast. It might have been last March.
Yeah.
But no, it's been a while. I think I was on over the summer, to be honest with you. But yeah, everything's good. I'm pumped up, obviously, for Villanova. This is unbelievable. If only Jay Wright could now get the recruits that Coach K gets. But yeah, this is great. This might be the last song for a while, though, because I think they're definitely losing Brunson, and it sounds like they're going to lose Bridges too. So next year might be a struggle, but this is great.
Yeah, and how about the relatively stress-free path to the Final Four this year? That's a very... I don't think a lot of people expected that. It's a surprise in itself, but in a good way for Villanova fans.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got one of the easiest brackets to deal with. Yeah. And I knew right away that they were going to
get
a
bracket was
lucky draw.
The
bracket was a joke, but they still performed, and no one's gonna remember the bracket years from now when they hopefully win the championship, so we'll see.
Yeah, Andy, you and John called that. You were saying that they really didn't have any reason not to make the Final Four, that they really did have some easy teams. I mean, Texas Tech is a good example. I mean, that team was never going to put up the points. It seemed like it was all laid out. And I think credit to Jay Wright for getting it done, right, Andy?
Yeah, I mean, like, John, we were texting on Selection Sunday. Like, I think the exact line was like, you could get Jay Wright could have Brunson and four Ogmans and four Utes and sleepwalk to the Final Four. But I will say, like, yeah, they kicked Alabama's butt. Purdue being a two seed in that bracket was a telltale sign. Now I will say, like, Texas Tech put up a good fight on Sunday. And Villanova had their worst game of the year. Like, they could not hit a three-point basket if their life depended on it. But they answered every time Texas Tech got it to within, like, 3 points or 4 points in the second half. So give credit where credit's due. I mean, Bridges was just amazing in that in the game against Alabama. Even West Virginia gave him the scare for a while. I was back and forth on that game. I figured West Virginia could create some sort of havoc, but then again, Villanova, if a team's going to try to play fast, well, Villanova plays fast too, and they're going to hit a lot. They're a much better jump shooting team than West Virginia, and that was the difference in that second half. So kudos where credit where credit's due. I when Tommy said he worries about the future and how he wishes Wright could get guys like Coach K gets. Well, that's a double-edged sword because Wright is getting all these players that are like, they're not top-tier NBA talent, but they're obviously really, really good. And so they gel, to use a gamble expression, they gel, and so he gets these really good teams to just kind of mold year in and year out. So it all depends on what your preference is.
Yeah, absolutely. On Nova, let's go to John. Any thoughts about their road to the Final Four? I mean, you pretty much had it laid out, so I guess it's a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I mean, we knew when the brackets came out that they were in the easiest region with Purdue as the two seed, and they turned out to be even weaker when Isaac Haas got hurt. And Texas Tech certainly put up a good fight. We almost thought they would maybe, you know, at least cover the spread with a couple minutes to go, but they just couldn't make anything in the last 2 minutes, and Nova pulled away. But, yeah, it's interesting you make the Duke comparison because, you know, Duke is getting all these one-and-done players, the same with Kentucky, and they really haven't won much of anything. I'm sure we'll talk about the Kansas-Duke game in a little bit, but, I mean, Coach K was out-coached by Bill Self with a much less talented roster, and Nova just seems to get those guys that stay more than 1 or 2 years, and like Andy said, they just become a real cohesive team, and that's kind of what wins in March these days instead of those one-and-done kind of players. I think the last team to win with really full of one-and-done players was that Kentucky team with Anthony Davis. I think it was like 2012 or somewhere around there. I mean, I have to go look it up, but I can't remember the last national champion with like all a roster full of one-and-done type players. So for all the recruiting hype, usually the team that's number one to start the season is not cutting down the net in April.
Interesting. Now, you did make an interesting call with saying Duke was the better team, and I earlier just said that Kansas was. I tell you what, Duke really is the more talented team. I mean, you mean Grayson Allen and Marvin Bagley, you know, those are guys that you're probably, at least one of the two, will end up seeing some significant NBA time in the near future. So you might have a point on that, John. I mean, I think that Kansas just simply was playing better throughout not only the tournament, but just throughout the year. I thought that Kansas had a better overall season. Duke was way up and down. Like, they were always losing to, like, St. John's, and they were losing to teams left, you know, here and there. Virginia shut them down, you know, stuff like that. So, but I think on a talent level, you're probably right about that. So, all right, let's get into this Midwest bracket, and we'll go back to Tom for a sec. So we looked at the Kansas-Duke game. That was a great game. That was really a lot of fun. Your thoughts on the Sweet 16 round and the Elite Eight, which include this game?
If I were a Duke fan, I'd be furious after that game. I mean, first off, that Grayson Allen shot should have went in, so they were really unlucky there. I thought that shot was going in. I mean, it rattled around the rim a couple times and then rattled out. I was surprised they didn't give Bagley the ball enough, but they've had problems giving him the ball all year, it seems. He never got the ball enough. I know he finished with 20-something points, but I thought he could have done more. I thought Carter and Bagley on the court at the same time caused a lot of problems for them. It seemed like their offensive flow wasn't the same sometimes when they were on the court together. And back to the recruiting, I think they might have a problem with that next year, too. It seems like they have a lot of the same type of players. They're going to have trouble next year with getting the ball to – I mean, they got the two top three recruits, and they're all around the same size. I know the Williams
Zion
is bigger,
Williamson.
But yeah. I mean, that guy's a beast, but I think it seems like all he can do is dunk. I watched a little of the McDonald's All-American game, and it just seemed like it's the same like five or six schools get all the kids, and no one else sniffs any of them. But as John and Andy said, you need cohesiveness to win, and Jay Wright, he got Mikal Bridges out of nowhere, and now he's going to be a lottery pick after his junior year, so what do I know? But Brunson was McDonald's All-American, and Jay Wright has had McDonald's All-Americans, but he's great at finding lower-tier players like DiVincenzo, who other teams don't want, but perform well. And DiVincenzo's going to be a four-year player. Same with Pascal. And Pascal, I thought, was the difference in the last game. His offensive rebound was unbelievable. And I think he could stop Azubuike for Kansas and control him and maybe get him in foul trouble. I think that's going to be the key to the game. I know you're going to discuss that later if I'm rambling, but yeah, if I were a Duke fan, I would have been pissed.
Yeah, I mean, the game was right there for them late. So, Andy, let's get your thoughts on that game, too.
Obviously, very entertaining, very up and down. Although, you know, like Mad Dog said, they didn't really shoot the three all that well, but they, you know, they kept chucking and chucking and chucking. You know, karma, believe it, don't believe it, but, you know, Grayson, he played hero ball, and how that ball just went around and around and didn't go in. I mean, it's crazy. What's funny, when Duke loses, when Alabama football loses, when the Yankees lose, when the Patriots lose, everybody but that respective fan base rejoices. And, you know, that second half, it did seem like Kansas was getting the short end of the stick with the whistle. You know, at one point, Duke had only had like three fouls committed against them, and Kansas had like nine, and every questionable whistle was favored to Duke. But, you know, sometimes even with a favorable whistle, it doesn't work out in your direction. Like, I can't believe I actually ended up taking Bill Self in that game, but I was just like, you know, I'll take the one seed getting the points in this spot, and who knows what will happen. I think I might have had some I'll tell you what happened. I had Kansas in the bracket, so I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go with my bracket, what little chance I have to get, you know, pennies on the dollar, the fifth place finish, whatever. Let me go with the bracket scenario. And you know, that Newman guy on Kansas stepped up.
Nah, you know,
yeah, the other guy, Devontae Graham, like he was lights out in the Big 12 tournament. He did really nothing in the big dance, and I was like, well, maybe he's due, and he also had a pretty good game, and that Euro kid hit that big shot. You know, it's funny, like, for that five-minute stretch in the second half when, you know, Kansas was continuously down two or three, like, they didn't make the shot to tie it until they absolutely had to do it. And, you know, it was just a crazy game. You know, overtime, I guess Kansas kind of, I wouldn't say exercised the will or anything. It's still a close game, but I think Duke definitely was a little crestfallen in overtime, and they ran out of gas. And, yeah, like John said, and Tommy said, if you're Duke, that's a tough one, tough pill to swallow. And if you hate Duke, then, you know, you're doing cartwheels when you know, you see Grayson Allen sobbing off the court.
Yep, there it is. And so it sets up a first matchup of Villanova versus Kansas in the Final Four. So let's go move to the other side of the bracket, and we'll look at our path to Michigan's berth in the Final Four in the West. And John, you are at full liberty to issue a call to Twitter if you want to. But no, they did a good job. I do sense that their offense just I never really know whether they're going to bring it from the field, because sometimes they don't. You know, the first round they didn't. And there was one other game where I just thought that they were very shaky from three-point range. But overall, did a pretty good job, and Beeline really knows how to manage this group. And so kudos to Michigan. Taking out Florida State is not a small feat. I know that Florida State wasn't really highly thought of by a lot of people going into the tournament, but they made a nice run to the Elite Eight. But Michigan had the better of that one. So let's get your thoughts on Michigan's path to the Final Four, John.
Yeah, can I add my thoughts on that Kansas Duke game before I get into?
Wait,
Michigan?
Did we not go to you for that? I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely.
No, that's all right. I'll segue right into Michigan. But yeah, I'm definitely bitter about that Duke game, of course, because like Andy, I was in two pools this year. No one cares about my bracket, but I'm going to tell you anyway. And the one that Tommy was doing, I had picked Virginia to win it all, and they obviously were knocked out the first round. This other pool I was in, I picked Arizona, and obviously they were knocked out in the first round as well. But I had the Final Four of Michigan, Villanova, and Duke was my third team. So if Duke had won that game, I would have been in great position to possibly win the pool next weekend. And then they're up 72-69 with a minute left and have the ball, and they lose the game. And as we said, just on like on a talent, just pure talent basis, I mean, they all five of their starters are going to be in the NBA. And, I mean, how many guys can you say that about in Kansas? I mean, honestly, I had no idea. But there's not five pros on that team. I thought Bill Self did a great job with his various, play sets that he ran, some great passing. And then just the style of play, they've just been kind of doing it all year. They have Azubuike in the middle, and he's just passing it around to all their shooters. Graham, Mikhailuk, Newman just hit tons of huge shots. Vic as well. So, I mean, just a great job by him just kind of knowing their strength and playing to it. And I really thought he got the best of Coach K, especially in the second half. And then obviously you need a little luck at the end there when Duke doesn't score, when they're up three. And then obviously the Allen shot, like you guys talked about, easily could have gone down. And then they just kind of ran out of gas in overtime. But, just completely busted my chances of winning anything. But if Duke had won, I would have been in good shape. But that's how it is. I guess after losing your champion the first night, to even have a chance at the Elite Eight is pretty good. But, so I guess on to Michigan. Honestly, the fact that they're even in the Final Four, I mean, Houston had them beat. They, as we said it last week, they beat Michigan everywhere but the scoreboard. If the kid from Michigan, I'm sorry, the kid from Houston makes one foul shot, the game is over. He misses two. You know, they call the timeout with, 2 seconds left, and then they throw that miracle pass. The kid hits Jordan Poole hits the three-pointer at the buzzer to win, and now all of a sudden Michigan's got a second life, and here they are in the Final Four. And I mentioned that the time when the guy from Houston missed the free throw was, I believe it was like 3 seconds left. And that's important because how big of a clown was Leonard Hamilton on Saturday night not fouling down 4 points with 10 seconds left? It's like, dude, you're playing for a trip to the Final Four. It's not like you're down 10 points at that stage. You know, and listen, I bet Michigan, so I'm happy he didn't foul because it ended up being a push. But, and then after the game, you know, Dana Jacobson is like, so, Coach Hamilton, tell me about the end of the game there. A lot of people are talking about how you didn't foul, and his response was, what are you talking about? Like, he had no idea, like, the game situation. And that just goes to show you how much of a clown he is. Because you can clearly see that team in Florida State, they have a lot of talent. I mean, you know, athletically, they are probably just as good as Michigan. And again, they're one of those teams poorly coached, but enough talent that they could beat anybody and lose to anybody, which we've seen all year, and we saw in this tournament. But Michigan, and the one thing that we've mentioned throughout the last few weeks on this show is when their offense doesn't have it, their defense has really come to play, which has not been the case in past years for John Beilein. And it's a dangerous combination. I mean, if you go by the Ken Pom analytics, I know some people are like really, I mean, that's like their Bible. They're like in the top 10 in terms of, you know, overall rankings because of their defensive efficiency, which is so much better this year. And you saw in the game against Texas A&M what can happen when they find their shooting. They'll just blow teams off the court. So we'll see which Michigan team shows up this weekend against Loyola. It should be interesting.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's interesting that you can see both sides of what Michigan's offense can do. And I just, you know, it is true that I think there was going to be a game in that tournament where they were just on fire from deep, and that was the Texas A&M game. They just absolutely lit it up. So what they bring in the next round coming up with the Final Four, I don't know. It'll be interesting. So let's go to Tom, and Tommy, let's get your feel for the Michigan path to the Final Four and other scenarios from that bracket.
As John said, they're a complete Jekyll and Hyde team. Beilein's an unbelievable NCAA tournament coach. He does a lot with little. I've always liked Wagner as a how's it pronounced? Wagner or whatever.
Wagner. Yeah.
I've always liked his game. That kid that hit the three to beat Houston, I still can't believe he made that shot. He's a stiff. But he made that shot. But, I mean, Michigan's so lucky to get out of that game, as John said. I mean, Houston dominated that game. And then out of nowhere, he makes that three completely out of his ass. I obviously had money on Houston, but whatever. That was a frustrating game. And plus, I think it ended around 1 o'clock. I was at a bar getting pissed because, obviously, Houston should have won that game, and they didn't. But more about Michigan. I'd be happy if Villanova ended up playing them. I'm more worried about Loyola just because of the way they shoot. But I think of the four teams, clearly it's Nova and Kansas, and then there's a drastic step down, and then I actually think Loyola is going to beat Michigan, but that's just me. That's about it. That's all I have to say about Michigan. Not that impressed.
All right. Well, you're not going to believe it. I actually think Loyola has a chance too, but more on that when we get to the official game preview. So, Andy, let's get your thoughts on Michigan and their road to the Final Four.
You guys covered it pretty well. They were all world against Texas A&M. And then, you know, I guess a quick thought on Florida State and that Gonzaga game. You know, Florida State is just physically they're specimen. They're really, you know, impressive. You know, Francesa would probably describe them as a bunch of Adonises because, you know, they're big and physical, but they doesn't always translate to, you know, good basketball. But we mentioned in previous shows that this is not your same Gonzaga team of previous seasons, and this Florida State team, they probably saw nothing like that in the West Coast Conference. I know they played good teams in November. You know, they played in that Nike tournament, and, you know, a few always schedules, big-time opponents. But you guys can funhouse me later, but I'd be willing to bet that they, in terms of bodies, and definitely not in the West Coast Conference, and they definitely could have used Karnowski from last year and even Sabonis' son that's in the NBA, because they were no match for them physically. And even then, that Florida State Gonzaga game was basically a game of runs where, you know, Florida State was up a lot early, and then as they are apt to do, they just go into Mongo mode, and Gonzaga comes back, and then there was another swing, and then Gonzaga came back, and then eventually Florida State just was too much for them physically. And then that game, that Michigan Florida State game, I was watching that at a strip club, so the sound was off, but I was definitely bitter. It was exactly what you would think, kind of like a dog fight, a low first half score, and it was 28-26 or whatever. And yeah, Michigan, they probably were, 20% from 3-point distance. It was not pretty. But they got it up 10, and yeah, like John, I had Michigan giving 4, so I guess it could have been worse. They could have not covered, but up 10, and with under 2 minutes left, you would like to be very comfortable with the victory in that point. But yeah, you know, Michigan, if one thing that they don't do well, besides their, cold streak from time to time, is they don't shoot free throws very well. And when you miss those front end of the one-on-ones, and, between foul 7 to 10, you don't make those front ends, you're inviting that other team that's hanging around to hang around even longer. And that's what happened in that game, because it was basically pumpkin time for Florida State, because they were just atrocious shooting themselves in the second half. But, they were able to hang around, and that Leonard Hamilton. See, that same team that doesn't foul down 4 with, 10 seconds left or whatever, will foul down 9 with 40 seconds left. it drives you nuts. But those are memoirs from a gambler point of view. But, Beeline's a great coach. Like you guys all said, he comes off really nice and genuine in these interviews. He's not like an ooga booga. He's, the antithesis of a Frank Martin type coach. And, he's been in the Final Four before. He hasn't won it, but, he's come close. And yeah, he, the same type of mindset with him. He's not going to get the stud that's going to go to the NBA. He gets some NBA players like that guy on the Knicks, Trey Burke and Hardaway Jr., but they're not blue chip players. They're guys that are going to stay for at least a couple of years, and Beilein will get at least 2 or 3 years of good, solid seasoning and development out of them.
Yep. So let's see, Tom, did we get your thoughts? No, I don't think we did. So your thoughts on the Michigan road to the Final Four?
You did get my thoughts, Dave.
Oh, I did? All right, then that takes us to Loyola Chicago. And what a run that this team that no one's heard of, making a Final Four appearance for the first time in at least 50 years. I mean, that's really impressive. So, seeing this team play the first game, actually, I think people were on it. Like, people were like, yeah, they could beat Miami. I mean, Andy and John were on top of that. They thought that they were going to pull the upset. They did. And I think one of you guys, maybe both of you, actually had Loyola Chicago beating the next game too, which at that point was Tennessee, and they absolutely did. I think they had the buzzer beater basically to beat them. I don't know if it was the buzzer beater, but it was pretty close to buzzer beater, and that was impressive. The game against Nevada, that got pretty exciting, and then we mentioned the Kansas State game, which Kansas State was pretty fortunate to be there, but what might have been if they had everybody healthy on that team. So that's the latest in the South. So why don't we start this with John? John, how did Loyola Chicago do it? I'm interested in your thoughts on this region.
I mean, when you watch them, I mean, it's like almost a mini version of Villanova in that, I mean, their passing is unbelievable. They have an open shot on every possession, whether it be a three or a layup. I mean, I don't know. It really came out of nowhere. I mean, if you look back at the preseason kind of predictions, they were definitely one of the favorites to win the Missouri Valley Conference, and they clearly dominated the league all year. But, I don't think really anyone could have seen this kind of run coming. And it's funny because if they had lost their conference tournament, as the one seed, they would have not gotten an invite more than likely into the NCAA tournament. They would have never been here, which just goes to show you, how crappy the selection committee is. They would have just taken another, the 10th place team from the ACC or whatever. But, they're really impressive. They're well coached. And, that Kansas State game, I mean, they just dominated them from the tip. And I guess typical like Bruce Weber, too, at the same time. I mean, they were not even competitive in that game. And, yeah, they did not have Dean Wade, the whole tournament. He did play a little bit in the game against Kentucky. So, honestly, I'm still kind of pissed they lost that UMBC game. And we were robbed of I'm pissed that they beat UMBC, rather, and we were robbed of another round with them. They were another really fun team to watch, like we discussed last week. So we had to see Kansas State beat Kentucky, which I don't know what was more surprising, Kansas State beating Kentucky or, Loyola Chicago just dominating Kansas State in the next round. But, yeah, I mean, they're very well coached. I mean, everyone on the floor can shoot. And, I think it's a really good matchup against Michigan. I definitely give them a chance to win. We can talk about the game a little bit. But, for anyone who says, like, it wasn't a fluke, I mean, they beat a team from the ACC, Miami, the SEC, Tennessee. Nevada is one of the best mid-major teams in the country with NBA players. And then they beat a Big 12 team, which people consider the best conference overall in the country. So just a really impressive run, and we'll see if they can continue it. And, anyone who's, like, sick of, like, Sister Jean, I mean, she's 98 years old. Let her have her moment in the sun, all right? Come on.
Those guys are out there. I think even Sports Pop was a little bit over the Sister Jean thing yesterday on our NBA show. So, the haters are going to hate. I mean, Andy, you kind of brought that up. Like, you're like, well, just give it a day, then the people on Twitter will start hating on Sister Jean too. And there it was the next day. It absolutely happened. So another called it. So your thoughts on the Loyola Chicago run and the rest of the South Regional?
I'm just nothing against Sister Jean, the person. I'm just a little memed out on Sister Jean. It's like no one will – the people that are memeing Sister Jean, it's more of a statement of how how people are just so forgetful of what they used to think was the funniest thing ever. Like, the people that are so crazy about Sister Jean, them themselves won't know who Sister Jean is 2 years from now. It's like, remember when Monmouth was the coolest team ever because they were doing the bench celebrations, and like, no one remembers about that anymore.
Every team has
like every team now does like weird celebration stuff, but you know, Monmouth,
someone in Middletown, New Jersey remembers.
Oh, for sure. That team definitely should have made the tournament, but that's another story for another time. But you know what's funny? John mentioned how the thin line between winning and advancing, and he mentioned the Michigan-San Diego State game. Like, Loyola was down about 5 points with, like, less than 2 minutes left in that Miami game. And I don't have the box score in front of me, but I'm pretty sure Miami turned the ball over at least 3 or 4 times in the last 3 minutes of that game. And it was largely due to Loyola's good defense, and Loyola made some obviously some key shots in that very first game against Miami. And then, you know, Tennessee, we know what Rick Barnes can do and what Rick Barnes can't do. And they took advantage of going up against Rick Barnes. And then the Nevada game bothered me. So I was so happy for Loyola the first two games of the tournament. And then for gambling and pool purposes, we really needed Nevada to come through on last Thursday. And something happened at work where I had to stay late. So I was watching that game by myself in my office. And, you know, Nevada got up early. Then they couldn't put the ball in the basket. They went like the last 10 minutes of the half without scoring. And then in the second half, they let Loyola basically start like 10 for 10 or 11 for 11 or something, just layup after layup after layup. And then Nevada's pros, like, they stepped up their game, but it was just a disappointing, you know, 1 point loss for Nevada. I guess their time was eventually going to end. You know, they're so whatever the opposite of deep is, they've only played like 6 or 7 guys. They were probably running on fumes. You know, I know musclemen like to say, we don't get tired, we get stronger. No, you guys are going to get tired. You know, it's not a video game. But, you know, Loyola, they're so fundamentally sound. They remind you, like, a little bit of Virginia sometimes, a little bit like of those vintage Butler teams from, you know, 8 years ago, a little bit like Villanova. They're very unselfish. You know, this would be like a, you know, Mike and Montclair's favorite team to watch. And credit to them. You know, it's funny. Calipari did not have his team ready to play Kansas State. They were down 13-1 in the beginning of the game. Not even – they didn't even get to the under the first team they came out. So that's just inexcusable. That's a bad job out of Calipari. I don't – you have to respect your opponent. I know they – I don't understand what happened. I mean, Kansas State's just not that good. And, I mean, Loyola illustrated that. UMBC illustrated that. This, you know, just Kansas State's such a scrummy team, and it showed. And so good on Loyola for taking advantage of this bracket, because, you know, we all thought, at least myself, we thought Kentucky was going to, you know, have a cakewalk to the Final Four after all these other teams ahead of them, like Arizona and like Virginia and all those other teams were dropping like flies. And now, lo and behold, we got another 11 seed in the mix. And yeah, I think this Michigan game will be really close.
Yeah, I can't. We're getting pretty close to breaking this down. But lastly, let's go to Tommy on the Loyola Chicago run. First, just to throw this out there, I'm just glad that they beat, more than anything, I was just glad that they beat Kansas State, because I didn't want to see any more of that team. I was done with them. I was jazzed that they were able to beat Kentucky, but man, I mean, seriously, Andy has a point. Like, I think if Kentucky had their A game on and the effort on, Kentucky would have gone out there and played Loyola Chicago themselves. So I think that has a lot to do with Kentucky as to why, you know, Kansas State got that far. Anyway, let's go to Tommy. Let's get your thoughts on the South Regional.
How big of a loser did Bruce Weber look on the sideline when he was breaking his his what's it called? The board. The board. Like, I think the game was over. I think the only person that did not think the game was over was him and Chris Webber, who kept saying, "Oh, but if they bring it down to 12, they have a shot. If they bring it down to 12 with about 6 minutes to go, they have a shot." The game was over early on. I mean, Kansas State played like a joke. All I kept thinking the entire time was, how the hell did Kentucky lose to these guys? They played like absolute crap. They couldn't score. And no. People make fun of Charles Barkley, but he kept saying it. You have to put the ball in the basket. You have to score points. They couldn't score enough points. I mean, it was pathetic. But back to Loyola, they scared the shit out of me. John hit it on the nail on the head. They're just like Villanova, and if Villanova has a weakness, it's their defense and perimeter defense. If Custer and I forget the other kid's name, I think it's Robertson or something like that, but if those two shoot well, I think they'll beat Michigan. I think they'll give Villanova a run for the money if Nova beats Kansas, and that's going to be obviously a hard game for Nova to beat Kansas. But if they get there and that's the matchup, that will scare me dearly. I'm hoping Michigan finds a way to win, but I think Loyola is definitely going to cover, and I think they might win too. But they've been unbelievable. They were like a machine in the last game, shooting that high of a percentage in those and that big guy, the way he passes down low, he finds the open guy. I don't think they can't play any better. And they're on a big time roll. The only thing that might play against them is the time off,
right?
Where they have six days off.
Yeah.
So that might play against them, but they look great.
Well, I guess you could make the argument that there's a little bit of a layoff between the second round and the Sweet 16 too, but not as much. Like you said, there are a couple more days of idle time here in this case, so. We'll give that one a look. So you got that's a good little teaser. John, I'm going to give it to you. Gun to your head, who do you have winning this game? And let's get your thoughts on that Loyola-Chicago-Michigan game. Because like, I tend to agree with everybody so far. I think Loyola-Chicago's got a real shot. I'm not saying they're going to win. Maybe I'm kind of saying they're going to win. But I think they can win. I absolutely think they can win this game. So, John, let's get your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sets up well for them. I mean, especially if Michigan, I mean, out of the four games so far that Michigan's played, only one of them have they really shot well, and that was against Texas A&M. And Loyola has proved that their defense is just as good as their offensive efficiency. I mean, they've held teams down. I think Nevada was the only team who broke 70 points against them. So, yeah, I mean, the spread in this game is 5.5. I mean, I'll definitely take Loyola with the points, and it's going to be a close game. I think you could see this being like 55-53 either way, and whoever executes late in the game is going to win this. And it should be a good matchup between two really good coaches, and you know, we'll see what happens. But I think the spread in this one's a little bit too high, and I would not be surprised at all if Loyola were to win this game. I think they're pretty evenly matched here with Michigan. So that'll probably be the opinion of the rest of us here, but I definitely think that spread is high. You know, if you want to, I guess, gun to my head, who's gonna win? I mean, honestly, I don't know. We're just looking at just by the point spread. I definitely think Loyola will at least cover the spread for sure.
Yeah, let me give it a look. Michigan giving 5.5. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that's. I kind of see it as being about what I thought it would be, but I think taking the points is a good value play. There's no doubt. So let's see. Who do we have next? I guess we'll go to Tommy next, and get your thoughts on this game.
I've been pretty much saying it the whole 45 minutes. I'm going to pick Loyola. Mm-hmm. I think they'll win. Obviously, take the points, too. I think their shooting efficiency is unbelievable. Their defense is very, very solid. Love their guard play. I think guard play is huge, and obviously in college basketball. So, yeah, give me Loyola.
Do you take the under 129.5?
129. I hate the over unders, but yeah, if I had to pick, I'd pick the under.
All right, the under's been working pretty well for Loyola Chicago throughout most of this tournament. So I've been tracking over unders all month, And that seems to be a good play. So, Andy, let's get your look at this game, too.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. I mean, it's going to be, on paper, you would think it's going to be a low score. You know, both teams, they don't hoist up shots right away. It's like, it's the opposite of a Houston Rocket or North Carolina offense. They will pass and pass and pass and pass and pass and find an open look. And the way Michigan plays defense, I don't really know how what Loyola's style is, but there's not a lot of free throws in a Michigan basketball game. The Florida State game was a complete difference because, you know, Florida State, they kind of, the way they play defense, they kind of hack around and stuff like that. But it's going to be close. Right now, I would lean Loyola getting the points. If we're all mushing it, it's a loser or not, but you never know. John has always brought up this theory. I think last year it might have not been so hot. We could all take a look at some point and maybe give me something to do tomorrow at work instead of working because I hate work. But North Carolina was such a high offense power last year. But these final fours, and especially the championship games, but they're in these domes. These players are nervous, you know, biggest stage of their lives in the domes. The sight lines are different. The rims are tighter. Like, there has to be, there's got to be a trend where if you take the under instead of the over, you'd be winning money. But last year, that Gonzaga North Carolina game was really was a high score, and that the I think the Oregon game was also a high score. So I think last year might have like skewered the stats a bit, but there's been some low scoring Final Fours lately. So I'm gonna look tomorrow because I'm, you know, give me something to do.
Andy,
so yeah, that's a really low score, like the total. But I don't know. I probably won't play. If I have to play an under in one of these two games, it would be the Villanova Kansas game.
And that under is 155. So I would play it too.
High.
Yeah, that's a big number. And now there was a game that North Carolina played last year, and I will never forget because I had the over in that game, and they had four missed free throws at the end of the game. I think that was a semifinal game against whoever it was. It wasn't Gonzaga because Gonzaga was the championship game. But the previous round, that was I will never forget that game because it was such a frustrating moment. They needed 1 point to get the over, and UNC misses four consecutive free throws at the end of the game. I mean, you cannot make it up. I was there with Floyd watching that game. And he was just laughing the whole time while I was just writhing in pain. And it was just, I mean, that's kind of, it gives you the scene for what you can expect in these kind of games. I mean, guys get tight. I think unders tend to be what I've seen. I mean, I remember the most famous example, well, not famous, but I remember a very good example of a game that just ended up being really ugly. The 2002 National Championship, Maryland against Indiana. Do you guys remember that one? Oh, that was an ugly game.
Yeah.
Nobody could shoot in that one.
The worst one ever was, you know, it was great for me, but that Butler UConn national title game.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, that was a sight for sore eyes. I mean, I'm obviously happy UConn won, but for anything other than a UConn fan, that was really ugly.
Yeah. That was tough. I can't even remember if I even watched the end of it. And I mean, I don't want to, nothing personal on that. It was, like you said, it was a tough game to watch. So, you know, it happens. It'll happen. I think, you know, kids get nervous and we see these kind of scenarios. So, let's see. We had Tommy's take. We had Andy's take. I think we're done with the first game, right, guys? So let's go to the next game. So Villanova, Kansas, a matchup of two number ones. With all the chaos, we still ended up with two number one seeds facing each other, no less, in the Final Four. So this will be very interesting. Villanova's an up and down team. Kansas, I don't have a real beat on what their pace is. I guess they could be an up and down team. They have been in some really high scoring games within the conference, but this will be a good game. I also agree with Tommy though. I don't think 155 is going to happen, but I think it'll be a good game. And so we'll see if either team pulls away. since Tommy is the resident Villanova fan, I'm going to give it to you first for the analysis of this matchup.
This is who I wanted Nova to play between Duke and Kansas. As I said before, I was scared of Duke. But after watching Kansas play against Duke, now I'm a little bit more worried about Kansas. But I think the key will be stopping the big guy for Kansas, Azubuike. And the key for Nova will be perimeter defense. Seeing how Bridges plays defensively, I know he's known for being a great defensive player, but if you watch Nova as much as I do, he messes up sometimes in key situations. 2 years ago against Wisconsin in the tournament, he blew it defensively on a key possession, lost them the game. He's been struggling the last couple games. I know he was unbelievable against, Alabama, but, he's been struggling. He struggled last game along with the rest of the team, and the game before that, he didn't have a great game either. I think Brunson, obviously, he's been clutch. The only problem with him sometimes is that he's too unselfish. He doesn't shoot the ball enough. DiVincenzo worries me because he's not very good at handling the ball. A lot of turnovers. The other kid, Gillespie, he's a little bit like Archie was his freshman year. He doesn't know what he's doing half the time, but he can make a big three. Phil Booth has been non-existent for Villanova ever since he came back from the injury. I think he was good one or two games right when he came back, but ever since then he's been non-existent for the most part. The kid for Kansas who scored all the points in overtime, what's his name, Whitman? He's the one guy that really scares me outside of Azubuike. I think he scored all their points in overtime against Duke. But, that kid, he was a McDonald's All-American, I'm pretty sure. And he transferred from somewhere, I forget where. I think Mississippi or Mississippi State. Kansas nabbed him. Great player. And then Graham scares me too. 2 years ago when Kansas and Nova played in the Elite Eight, he was Kansas's best player, and he always comes up big in the big spot. But I think Nova pulls this out. I think it's going to be around 70 to 65, something like that. It's going to be right around the spread, basket here or there. Coaching advantage, I actually give the advantage to Bill Self. I can't even believe I'm saying that, but he's actually been, if you look at his resume, it's not bad. I mean, he gets a lot of Final Fours. He doesn't always, he clearly doesn't win them very often, but he gets his team to the Final Four a lot. Jay Wright is great in certain situations, but he lets the offense do whatever they want. And when Nova's struggling with their shot, it's going to be tough. Last game, they struggled with their shot, but they played the right team who also could not shoot. If Nova had played Loyola or another team last game, they would have lost. I think Nova finds a way to pull it out, but we'll see.
We will see indeed. Let's go to John and get your thoughts on the Nova-Kansas matchup.
Yeah, I haven't had a great feeling on figuring out Kansas all year. It's just, you know, they're not your typically highly talented Kansas team with a full of pros like we've mentioned. But I mean, Self has done a great job, and it's like Tommy. I feel weird saying that, but he's definitely coaching to the strength of their team, which is Azubuike passing it out to all their 3-point shooters. So if their shots are falling down, they have a great chance to win this game. And you know, Graham and Newman and Mikhailuk, those are your playmakers to make those shots. And I think this will be a pretty close game. Kansas, it's weird, like in each one of their games, like the Seton Hall game, they were up huge, and the guy from Seton Hall, Delgado, had like 25 rebounds. So I mean, I don't know if Villanova has anyone like him on the inside, but that's definitely somewhere where Kansas can be exploited. But in that game, they were off huge and then let Seton Hall come back and cover the spread at the end. Same thing in the Clemson game. They were up like 20 points in the second half and ended up letting Clemson,
you know, come back and cover at the end of the game. So, you know, there's definitely, they go through stretches where they have a hard time. You know, if they don't make their threes, they're really not going to score. But if they're shooting well, I mean, their offense has been really effective. And if Tommy's correct, and I'm assuming he is, about Nova's biggest weakness being perimeter defense, well, this is a game where, you know, Kansas could definitely exploit that if they're shooting well. So, you know, two good coaches, and I just think Kansas has just been kind of scumming their way through this all year, and I see no reason why they wouldn't again in this game. So, again, I'm not going to say they're going to win outright, but I'd be very surprised if Nova wins this by, like, 8 to 10 points. So I think both dogs are a good bet for the final four versus the spread. So, you know, +5.5 I see for Loyola and +5 for Kansas. And would it not be surprised if either one of those won the game outright?
Yeah, I mean, I think what this says is that the matchups are pretty solid. Like, these are games where it would be, you know, it wouldn't be obvious that you would see a blowout win by either side. So I think that's going to probably hold, but you never truly know with these games. A lot of things can happen. So let's go to Andy and get your thoughts on the Nova-Kansas game.
Yeah, I gun to my head, I would take Kansas getting the points, but then you do worry about Brunson making big shots in big spots down the end, because that's basically all he does. And I can just see it, like, in the, when Kansas is, like, down 4 and 3.5 minutes left, and they need a spot. They need a stop. They need to stop bigly, and they need it now. And they're doing everything right for the first 25 seconds on the shot clock, and then Brunson hits, like, this fucking tweener of a jump shot, or he drives, or he gets an and one. You know, mark my words, something like that will happen. And then the next thing you know, Kansas is, you know, they're rushing themselves, and they, you know, rush a layup in this out of control, and then Villanova hits a three, and then good night. But I really think, selfish reasons, you know, you want to watch close games for the final four, and I do think you will see a close game. Candace better, they better be ready to hit some threes. You know, we were just talking about tight rims in the big building, but they better make threes. And like Tommy said, perimeter defense, I was not aware that they were prone for good three-point shooting teams to take advantage of it. But just looking back at who they played, I'm not going to count, you know, who they played round one, you know, Robert Morris or whoever it was. But Alabama is a terrible jump shooting team, and they killed them. West Virginia, they do not shoot threes very well, and they did not perform in the second half. In Texas Tech, they could not shoot a three if their life depended on it last Sunday. And we know Kansas is very good at shooting threes. So, and obviously Villanova is very talented offensively. But I would still, you know, take the under because it's such a big final, you know, it's a final four game. You really don't see, I guess you guys can funhouse me, but this is not going to be like Golden State. You know, it's not like a Golden State scenario where they're pros and, like, they're going to score, 5 minutes into the game. It's not going to be like 18-18. It just usually doesn't work that way in a college setting, you know, kind of like the first quarter of the Super Bowl. You know, you gotta let the nerves settle down. I think that'll happen. You guys mentioned Azubuike, and maybe he cannot shoot free throws, his life dependent on it. So maybe you'll see a hack of Azubuike at some point during the game. I forget who
Jay
did
Wright's
it in
not
the regular
smart.
Season this year. You're not, well, you never know.
He's
Bill
not that
Elfman,
smart.
Smart might keep him in there. John and I remember there was one game a Big 12 school did that, and he kept them in there, and everyone's like, get him out. He's 1 for 8 from the free throw line, and he know exactly what they're doing, and he kept them in there. But and the other thing you worry about with Azubuike is foul trouble. And, you know, especially in college, coaches are so quick to take out their guys that have two fouls in the first half. I think Brunson actually got in foul trouble in one of these games this year, and Wright kept him out for the first half, but that's okay. You know, Coach K, to his credit, and I only know this because he told Doggy during the interview this week, like, he'll let his player play with two fouls deep into the first half. And he's like, if he gets his third foul, like, then it's a growing, you know, it's a learning experience for him. But he's like, but I don't subscribe to the theory of when your star gets two fouls in the first half, you bench him for the entire half. He's like, you got to let him play through it. So hopefully in this type of game, we don't like to see any of the big names get in foul trouble early. That definitely, I know we're rambling here, but that definitely screwed Gonzaga bigly last year in the national championship game. Like, if you guys remember, one of the takeaways the day after was, like, the ref called so many fouls, especially on Gonzaga, that they were definitely hampered by foul trouble in that game. So you don't want to see that in a big game.
Absolutely. I mean, when we see a big game, you want everybody to play. You want everybody to be in it in the end, and you don't want guys to get hurt. You don't want guys to get fouled out or anything like that. That's never fun. So I agree with you there, Andy. Well, that'll wrap it up for us for the tournament. If you want to, you can present your, like, championship prediction. That's up to you guys, but I guess I'll give you one. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could see any of these guys taking, well, not maybe not Loyola, but anybody else. I think I could see the other three teams taking it. I'll probably just go Kansas, you know, because it's been that wacky. I guess it wouldn't surprise me. So let's see. John, if you could pick one of the four, who would you pick for the championship?
Oh boy. I mean, honestly, Dave, I could see any one of the four, you know, winning it. I'll root for Nova just because of Tommy. And then I have another friend who is a Nova fan. So I guess I'll say Nova if I had to choose one to win.
All right, Andy.
I mean, if I could gamble on it now, I would bet on Villanova. If my head would say Villanova, but for personal reasons, like, you know, recouping some funds, anybody but Villanova would work out for me. But I don't see Villanova losing to Loyola or Michigan if they get to that game. Like, if they're gonna lose, you know, I think it would definitely be against Kansas. You know, sometimes it works out that way. This, you know, where, like, the biggest challenge for these teams, it's the semis. And then once they get to the finals, it's not so much. I remember, like, when, you know, not to be all about me, but when the Final Four was, like, UMass, Kentucky, and the other bracket was, like, Syracuse and, like, Mississippi State. And whoever was going to win between UMass and Kentucky was going to win. And Kentucky beat UMass, and obviously, yeah, then they went ahead and beat the Orange. So I think we might see something like that this year where, you know, whoever's going to win between Kansas and Villanova will most likely, you know, take, you know, will beat Michigan or Loyola. But, you know, I hope we get to see, you know, two out of three games give us some juice. You want three for three, but you'll settle for two out of three.
I like it. All right, Tom, we'll give it to you for the final prediction. I can imagine what it is, but let's give it to you officially.
First, I want to say thanks to John for wanting to root for Nova. Maybe Andy could take some notes of how to be a good friend, but that's besides the point. My head says Nova wins, and actually my heart says Nova wins too. I think they're going to find a way. I think they're the most complete team. I told you what scares me about this team. It's mostly Jay Wright. In a big game, something about him. I know they won 2 years ago. So what the hell am I talking about? But I'm too close to the situation. I watched too many of these games, so I'm too close to it. So my heart gives in a way. But something about Jay Wright in these spots scares the shit out of me. But I think Nova finds a way to pull it out.
All right. I think that's a solid play. I mean, you got to go with your team. If your team's gone this far, I think it's a good spot. And so let's have a good Final Four. Now, Tom, I'm going to ask the same question about the NBA. I hope we can get you on one of the NBA playoff scenarios. Same for you, Andy, because the Popes and I are going to have a lot of fun covering the NBA playoffs this year. So if you guys want to pop in for that, let me know. Well, we'll be in touch. But for now, I want to get your feeling for who's going to win the NBA Finals. First of all, I think we can safely write Cleveland off. Or are you in that group? Because
No. They still have the best player, Dave.
You're
LeBron
not doing it,
is still
huh?
the
right.
best player.
All right. I hear that a lot.
In the NBA, the best player matters so much. You can never write Cleveland off. I know that his supporting cast is a joke. I know Kevin Love has his issues, and the rest of the team's it's a disgrace. But he should win the MVP. I know he's not because of Harden and whatnot, his numbers and how great Houston is. But the most valuable player every year is LeBron James. And I think it's kind of a joke that he doesn't even get acknowledgement for winning the MVP. And now he's getting criticized for saying that he would vote for himself. I mean, you ask any NBA player or any college player who they think is the best player, they're going to say themselves. That's why they're at that level.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. You're right.
I don't think Cleveland's going to win it, but I would never count them out. Golden State, their injuries. Seems like Curry. I don't know if it's because of Curry's sneakers, the low tops, or what, but something seriously wrong with his ankles. And Draymond Green with the flu. What the hell does he have? Like some sort of crazy illness? Does he have an STD or like what's going on? How can he be out for that long with the flu? I feel like the team's. I don't know what's going on with that team. I don't know if they're bored or what, but if I gun to my head, I'll still pick Golden State, but I think I'd end up getting killed. But it's crazy this year. I think this is like one of the best NBA seasons in a while to watch.
Yeah.
A lot of drama, a lot of storylines. It's actually been fun. And I think the ratings are up too. So,
yep.
I'm not alone with saying that. So, but yeah, I think gun to my head, I'll still pick Golden State.
Okay. Now, are you buying Houston as a viable playoff team, like a team that can take teams to the limit?
That's why I'm still picking Golden State because I don't really trust. I don't trust James Harden. I mean, look what he did in a tight spot.
Right. Now I've seen. I'm aware. I mean,
I don't trust him.
So interesting though, because the team around him is better than any team he's had before. And that's why I think they might have more of a shot this time. I think their defense is a lot better than teams of the past, but it's very tricky to evaluate that within the regular season because not everybody's bringing their A game throughout the year. So
that's what I'm saying with Golden State.
Right.
Like, do we really even know if they're playing that hard? I mean, do they even give a shit at this point? Is Curry that hurt?
Right.
Is Draymond Green just taking 8 games off at this point? I think Durant said he was playing. Was it last night or tonight's game? But I don't even know if he's playing, but who knows? It's been a lot of fun to watch this year.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And a lot of teams, a lot of young teams, too, that are getting in the mix. You know, we've talked about Utah and Toronto.
A ton of teams tanking, my God.
Yeah.
The NBA's got a serious problem with the tanking. I mean, the Knicks are a joke. They're going to finish with, like, the ninth worst record. How's that even possible?
Without Porzingis most of the year. That's crazy.
I know.
Yeah.
And of course, typical Nick way, now they're starting to win games. I mean, Jesus Christ.
That's what they've been laughing at.
Yeah, I know. You know they're going to pick that idiot point guard from Oklahoma. Trae Young. They're going to pick.
John knows all about it. Janie does too.
And he's going to be an absolute bust.
Now
he's way too small. I can't see him being a good NBA player. I can't see it. He's too small.
I am gratified that you feel this way because I think we're all pretty skeptical about it. And John, if you can expound on that a bit. I mean, you've been pretty turned off by the Trae Young hype. Do you see any value in him as an NBA player yourself?
I mean, obviously he has value. I mean, he's going to be a first-round pick. It was just the hype. It was just sickening all year. And then, you know, I think we said on the after the selection show, you know, Dick Vitale's, it was Oklahoma in this tournament. Well, I mean, you promoted him just ridiculously all year. It was disgraceful. They had a Trae Young tracker
on games that he wasn't even playing in, like on other games on the network. So it was just the hype that was ridiculous. I mean, he could be a decent NBA player. I'm not saying that he's not, but I think definitely, you know, he's not going to be a – he's going to be a top – what's the lottery, like 12 picks? I think he'll be in the top 12,
yeah.
But he's not going to be like the top 5 picks. No way. I don't see that.
Yeah, you can't draft number one. That'd be asinine. But yeah, probably top 12. I probably agree with that. So Andy, let's give you some time to get to soak in some of this stuff. So who would you have coming out of the NBA for the finals this year? Like, who do you think is going to win the title? And then, if you want, you can throw some Trae Young stuff.
Yeah. I think I'm good with the Trae Young. He'll obviously get drafted, and who knows, like, NBA system's wide open. He'll get plenty of shots, and, you know, he'll still score his fair share of points, but the story is yet to be written for him. But, you know, these NBA finals, the playoffs, I think it's going to be wide open. You know, the Celtics, they're all hurt now. They're slowly coming back. Brown's back, and Smart will be back for the playoffs, and Irving will it's funny, like Lou Lang Lou with him, everyone said he was going to be completely done for the rest of the year, and now they're saying he'll definitely be back for the second round if they get to the second round. And you know, the East is more wide open than it's ever been, so that's why it's such a shame that Irving had to go under the knife. Like, so Atlanta sucked and the Bulls suck, and now like the Bucks are much better, and you know, the Pacers are nibbling, and Toronto is actually, they've arguably taken the next step. Like, in the past, you really couldn't trust Toronto, and you could never trust Washington. I still don't think you can trust Washington, but now I give a little more credit to Toronto. Obviously, they're the one seed right now. The season ended today. Those two teams never, ever, ever get it done in the big spot. In the playoffs, primarily because LeBron James is the best player in that conference, and he has his way against them. So, you know, I love laughing at the Cavs in the regular season because they don't even hide it when they take nights off, and that's fine. Like, I should have learned. Like, last night they played in Miami, and then halfway through the game, the announcer's like, "Oh, they flew into Miami the day early." So. Like, what do you think they were doing the night before in Miami if they had it, especially if they had an extra day? Wow. They were getting after it. It's freaking South Beach. And so, but then tonight they, you know, they beat the Cavs, or not the Cavs, they beat the Hornets easily. So with LeBron, I always say it on Twitter, it's like, it's a long season. And so that you get the good LeBron when it's a long season, and you get the bad LeBron when it's a long season. And Nance is good. Nance is good. Not Jim Nance, Larry Nance.
Larry Nance, yeah.
He's going to be good for him. Because he's like, he reminds me of like a poor man's Al Horford. Because like, he just does the little things. He shoots threes. He can
defense.
Get his own shot. He gets offensive rebounds. He's just a fundamental guy. J.R. Smith is a clown. And Jeff Green is in a coma. But like Tommy said, if you have LeBron, you have a chance. Now the West, it's like, I also... If they can't get to the finals this year, or at least be competitive in the conference finals against Golden State, then they are like full-time frauds. And everyone here is, I think, in all agreement. We think James Harden is a huge hot dog. We all question the D'Antoni system. Fun to watch, but can it really win a playoff series in late May, early June, where the game definitely slows down in the fourth quarter, and you have to actually like post up and do things like of that nature. We know they've come up short time and time again, but you know, this is the year. You know, the Spurs are not the Spurs. Golden State's a little banged up. Maybe all these you know, early summers, late springs, where they're playing basketball, you know, an extra 20 games a year, it's catching up to them. You know, Memphis isn't the same. The Clippers aren't the same. Portland You know, Portland's the 3 seed at the moment. You know, usually Portland always ends the season really well, but they still never really get a high seed. They're always anywhere between like a 6 and an 8. But this year they're going to get a top 4 seed. But they're kind of a 2-man band. You know, mm-hmm. Harkless and Amin are okay, but yeah, if Houston cannot put up a entertaining fight against Golden State or beat them after what they've done this regular season, then LOL Harden. But I'm a Celtic homer. I don't think they're going to get to the finals this year. It's going to be, I would say it's going to be Cleveland. I still can't put all my faith in Toronto. Not with DeRozan. I'm not ready to embrace the Raptors full time yet. We'll see what happens. I think as a selfish person that just likes to watch like good basketball, I really hope Golden State can get healthy by, the middle of April, or at least the second round. Yeah, because Curry's not playing in the first round. That's already been confirmed. So, hopefully they get healthy, because we all want to see, good basketball in the springtime.
Yeah, and I think there's one matchup that people were talking about on the Ringer NBA show. I think that was a couple days ago, but no, that was yesterday. Excuse me. But somebody following the one of the Warrior beat guys said that the Warriors were a little bit scared of Oklahoma City of all the teams. And if you think about it, you go back to the last couple of games they played against one another. The Thunder absolutely trashed them in the last matchup in Golden State. And then the first matchup, which was back in December, the Thunder had a pretty good beatdown of them too. Now, again, the context is regular season, the games are not high super intensity, but I think Russell Westbrook is going to definitely throw everything he's got at the Warriors. So, I mean, that might be more interesting than anticipated. So, I don't know if you guys are buying it. I mean, but it's very interesting to think about that, because that could be a tricky matchup for Golden State. And Portland might be too, but I tend to buy into your point, Andy, that it's a 2-man team. And I just feel like guys, especially if the 2-man are in the backcourt, it just seems like it's a team that can be beaten in a 7-game series. So I don't know if I can take him super seriously as a playoff team, but so those two guys are great. I mean, McCollum and Dame Lillard are quite fantastic. So good stuff. I guess that's it. Tom, any last thoughts? We'll go down the line.
Yeah. I'll just say that as long as Melo is on the court in the last 5 minutes, Oklahoma City has no shot.
Fair point. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a joke, and he takes way too many shots, though. Someone needs to tell him he's not nearly as good as he thinks he is, and he needs to calm the F down. He ruins way too many games for that team.
Yeah. All right, Andy?
No more basketball thoughts for me, but we're almost there, guys. Baseball starts tomorrow.
Yes.
Masters starts next week. And,
do we give Tiger a shot? I have to ask you guys, does Tiger have a shot?
Earmuffs on for John. Like, I don't know. I think he's not, so here's the thing, he's not going to make a fool of himself. Like, in previous, in the last couple of years when he's played in these tournaments, like, he's shot anywhere from like 80, that U.S. Open at Chambers Bay where he basically looked like a weekend golfer. Like, I think we've moved on to that point where like he's going to be okay. Like John should probably describe it better, but like he's not vintage Tiger. He'll never be vintage Tiger again. But like he relies on his putter and short game now more than ever, because he sprays the ball all over the place with his driver, and he's still not hitting. He's not hitting green stiff, pin high like he used to. So he's like a grinder. Like back in the day when Tiger had his like C game, he'd still win because he grinds. Like now, even with like Tiger's A game, it doesn't exist yet. At least like he really needs to be like the best putter to have a chance in my like you know, casual opinion.
I tell you, he's been more competitive, though, in the last month than I've seen him in quite a long time. And I think that's a tribute to his his improvements in the short game. He sank some pretty good putts. I think it was a couple weeks ago. This week was match play, which, you know, match play, once if can get Sheeran, because if one guy gets on top of another guy and it's over in like half the round, which is the case with Bubba Watson winning, what was it, like 7-6 or something like that? Like, he basically had that thing won with 6 holes to go. And I'm like, all right, I guess that's it. What is NBC going to do now? I mean, that was the whole thing. It was like an hour early. So anyway, let's go to John. Let's get your thoughts on the whole Masters thing and other final thoughts.
Yeah, quickly, is Tiger going to win? I don't think so. But like Andy said, he's not going to embarrass himself. He's going to be in the top 20, top 15. You'll have your Tiger fans tuning in to see if he'll make a run. But I don't think he's quite there to win that tournament just yet. It is one of his favorite courses, but I think he still hits a few too many errant drives to win that. But I'm going to pull a CMB. Can I talk NFL for a minute here?
As long as it's not about Odell Beckham.
You know, well, that was great, exactly. So I don't think he's done any NFL free agency. I just want to make one point. The Oakland Raiders are going to be the biggest joke in the NFL this year. Like, did you hear like what Gruden was saying recently? He's like, we're going to take the game back to 1998. I don't need any analytics, man. And then he goes out and signs Doug Martin. And then, you know, Jordy Nelson is one of my all-time favorite Packers. But anyone who watched the NFL last year knows he was just completely done. It was sad that they cut him. You know, personally, but you know, the time has come, and then they sign him to like a $30 million contract the next day. The Raiders are going to be a disaster next year. I cannot wait to bet against John Gruden and the Raiders next season.
Yeah.
You know, Case Keenum in Denver, that's a complete joke. Bet against Denver next year. He's not going to put up any type of numbers like he did with the Minnesota Vikings. Sam Bradford, $20 million to the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, you might not even play 2 games for them. That was ridiculous. And yes, I will say, if the Giants trade Odell Beckham, they're completely foolish. Like, why would you trade your best player? Because there was a video of him having fun. Like, okay, yeah, he's stupid for doing drugs, but like, he's not beating his girlfriend or beating a child. Like, really, are you going to be that stupid to trade your best player? And they're the only player that fans want to come see besides Eli Manning. That would just be completely idiotic. And I know. If Fiddle was listening to this show, he probably just turned it off and started talking about football. But I don't know if he was listening even to begin with.
We haven't said anything about baseball, so there's no way he's listening. And we've been on for okay. Over an hour.
This is true. You're right, Tommy. But anyway, those are my quick thoughts on NFL free agency. And yeah, really looking forward to the Masters next week. You know, if we could get a 50-degree day around here, that would be nice too. But I guess we'll take the golf, the good golf for now.
John, I'm going to stay with you for one more question because the Rams had some really splashy moves. They signed the Kamakansu to a 1-year, $12 million deal. They made the trade for Marcus Peters. I think they signed another guy too for the defense. I've been saying on Twitter and everywhere else that I'm a little skeptical about the Sue thing because who's the other guy that they trade? Oh, no, I think what's happening is I was thinking ahead that they might trade for Odell Beckham Jr., which I think is a slam dunk for the Rams if they actually do that. But Sue, for example, for his part, I just think that he's over the hill at this point. I don't know what he's going to bring. I'm a little skeptical of that signing myself. What did you think of the Rams offseason so far?
I mean, they're going all in, that's for sure. I mean, it's the model you're seeing in the NFL when you have really good players on rookie contracts like they do with Goff and Gurley, you can spend money elsewhere, and that's what they're doing. They traded for Peters, like you said. They traded for Aqib Talib to solidify their secondary, and now they put Sue on their defensive line already with Aaron Donald. I mean, on paper, I mean, that's a really good defense. Yeah. But like we've seen in past years, remember the Eagles, the dream team? You know, they signed all those players and it was a complete flop. I mean, you know, there's got to be some, you know, gelling, as you would say, for all these guys that put their individual talents together. So we'll see if it happens. But on paper, anyway, it looks pretty good. But, you know, you know, we'll see. I don't know if, you know, if that always works out, who wins free agency very rarely, you know, wins in the NFL. So it'll be interesting to follow, and it'll be definitely one of the favorites heading into the season.
Yeah, I agree. You know, before all of that, I thought that the 49ers would have actually won the NFC West. I think it would be sensible to pick the Rams at this stage, but I tend to get a little bit sketchy when you talk about a team that just buys a lot of guys. But for what it's worth, the Eagles basically did the same thing last year. They filled needs through free agency, so I call this the Eagle strategy. And it worked. It worked great for the Eagles, so I guess it'll work out. So I don't know if I ever got your feel for that, the whole Rams scenario, Andy, but we're kind of out of time, so we'll just have to leave it at this. If
you guys... Dave.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask John if the Giants could get a top 10 pick for Beckham, would you do the trade then?
If someone were to give them 2 first round picks, like was rumored, I would do it. I would.
What if it was just the floor? Just Cleveland's floor?
Just Cleveland 4, so they would have the second pick and the fourth pick.
Correct.
That's tough. I wouldn't do it. I don't know.
Oh, I would do. I would do that in a heartbeat.
You would?
Yeah, because
I don't know.
Look what they'd be. They'd be probably getting Barkley or Nelson. And they wouldn't have to pay Beckham all that money.
That's true. Yeah, that's a decent point. It's just I guess you could replace him with 2 like solid receivers. I don't know. He's just such a unique playmaker that he's literally the only one like him in the NFL. That would be a really tough call. But if that's the price, I'm 50-50 on it. I would lean no, but I could definitely see why you would accept it.
And I will say this, if the Giants don't take a quarterback at 2, I'm going to be livid. And if they take Barkley at 2, I'll be furious. They have to take a quarterback at that spot. I mean, there's so many old-time Giant fans who just piss me off to no end. They think they can keep Eli for like another 2 or 3 years. If they all say, oh, let's just get Barkley or Nelson and we'll be fine. As I always say, fine isn't good enough. Come on. Like you want to be great. I don't want to be 8-8. I don't want to be 9-7 and out in the first round. I don't get what Giant fans' thought process is. Eli has 1 year left. Have him play next year, and then that's it. Then you go to the kid. I don't get what their thought process is. And I really don't think the Browns are going to take Darnold. I think they're just saying that, hoping that the Giants either try and trade up or what, but I really don't see Cleveland taking Darnold at 1.
Let me give it to Andy for some thoughts on all of this, because I do actually, we do have a lot of juice here as of the moment. I like the Jets trading up, too. Remember how the Jets traded up for, was it the 4? The number 4 pick? Or somebody, some really high top 5 draft pick. That was a great call. Of course, our friend Chris Carlin hated it, but he's such a fucking tool. I'm done with that guy. Andy, let's get your thoughts on pretty much all the above.
Well, I know whatever the Browns do with they'll screw it up somehow. I will not wake me up when the Browns actually do something positive and not laughable. They will foobar whatever they do. If they take your boy from USC, condolences. Like, jeez, they haven't had enough of USC quarterbacks. Didn't they take Kessler pretty high?
Yep.
They'll screw it up. Whoever, like, even if Darnold's gonna be a good pro, like, anybody that goes to Cleveland, they just ugh. But people are behind them because they say they got talent at the wide receiver position and defense. I just need to see it happen. And with the Rams, yeah, they are building up something with some strong potential. But we might all need to kind of cool the Jets a bit, because let's not forget, last year the media thought Oakland was ready to take the next step. Tennessee was going to take the next step. Yeah, I know Tennessee went to the playoffs, but they were like projected to be really, really good, and Oakland definitely just fell flat on their faces. And it was only the same time when the you know, the media and NFL fans and, you know, people like us on message boards, we're all saying, you know, really good things for Oakland and Tennessee. Everyone was really like laughing at the Rams. You know, they just got rid of Fisher. People thought, you know, Gurley was, you know, struggling. They had no offensive line. Gurley was going to suck. Goff looked completely lost as a rookie quarterback. They had no, you know, look at what they're doing. Why are they getting all these guys from the Bills, like, for wide receivers? And then they had a really good season. I mean, they ended the season really well, got a taste of the playoffs, and now they're making all these moves. And, you know, just remember, you know, that you still got to play the game, and you still got to, you know, produce. Like we all said, like, you have to play the game. Like, you're not going to – you don't win divisions in May, and you don't win them in the preseason. You don't win them in training camp. Like, once week one starts, then everything is for real. And if they're reading their own press clippings, you don't want them to get big-headed, because that could backfire on them too. Just because you're being told left and right that you're going to win the NFC West, you know, got to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing. You don't, you know, what is it they say that about teams on paper? I mean, teams on paper, that's only a means to an end. We got to see it on the field too. So we will see if it all shakes.
But it is right there. I mean, San Fran and LA should be really good. Yep. And Seattle, they're blowing it up. Arizona is, in a rebuild situation. So there's definitely some changing of the guard. You know, all these sensitive Seahawks fans are mad that Sherman is a Niner. I mean, that just goes to show you, it's a freaking business. Remember when, you know, Sherman beat the Niners and he scared white Americans because he got angry, you know, he was yelling with Aaron Andrews. Like, oh my God, what an intense rivalry. Well, guess where Sherman is now? Like, it happens. Bears become Packers. Packers become Bears. Pats become Jets. You know, it's a business.
Yeah. Steelers become Colts and vice versa. I mean, we've seen it. Actually, Steelers become Patriots. You saw that, Andy. James Harrison. Did you have fun
exactly.
with him?
Oh.
Yeah. Good stuff. All right. Well, gosh, I hate to break it up, but I'm going to end it here. So, guys, thanks so much. And I'm looking forward to getting you guys back for various scenarios down the road. We do need to do an NFL free agency show. I'll get in touch with Biebs, and we'll see if we can get him in on the mix for that, John. We have the Masters show coming up. We've got the WrestleMania show. That's next week. And then...
Who's on the WrestleMania show?
Good group. We got Quickies coming back. Yachts has declared he's in. Parcells falling out. Fiddle Elfier is in. Anybody else? I haven't got confirmation from Umberto's Clam House, but I'm hopeful that he'll be in there too.
What's the marquee matchup? What's the big thing for WrestleMania? Is The Rock coming back? Who is it?
I don't know. Well, Ronda Rousey might be.
Come on, Dave.
Well, it's a bad job out of me. I don't usually do my research until a day before the show, so I should have probably done some cursory research before I brought that to the table. I don't know.
Who's coming back? Daniel Bryan's back, so I think he's going to be fighting somebody.
Yeah, Daniel Bryan, yeah.
Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I know who he is. He stinks. They don't have enough good... The little I know about wrestling, they don't have enough guys that are good on the mic. Like, you
that
need someone
true.
Good on the mic, like The Rock. Not, like Brock Lesnar, like he might be the worst person on the mic ever. They don't have enough good mic guys.
That's a very fair point. Absolutely. I mean, it's been the problem for about how long? Like 15 years? About 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. Hope you guys enjoy that next week. It'll be a hilarious show, I'm sure. And by then, I'll have my research done and I'll have all the matchups. We're even going to do odds. We actually do odds on all these matches. So that should be hysterical, just breaking that down. So, guys, have fun this weekend. Enjoy the Final Four. This has been a lot of fun. So enjoy, guys, and take care of yourselves, and we'll see you guys all down the road here on the show.
Thanks, Dave.
All right,
Dave. Thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, fellas. Peace enjoy. Out. Good luck to your picks, too, or whatever they may be. So That's it for this program. Enjoy the Final Four, everybody. Have a great Easter, too, by the way, if you partake, or Passover if you partake in that. I'm Dave Medina. You can follow us at DidCow on Twitter or www.didcow.com on the web. And we'll be back next week. No NBA report, but WrestleMania preview comes your way about a week from now. So until then, we'll see you next time.